Hello, and welcome to the fifth episode of AD Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, and the man who stayed up all night to finish Uncharted 4 in time for this podcast, David.
Hello.
And at the top of the show, I would like to mention that AD Game Club has a Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/ADGameClub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. Anything you want to talk about before we move on into the game, David?
No, as mentioned, that's pretty much all I've been doing the last night or two, so I'm ready to talk about Uncharted 4.
All right. So, getting into Uncharted 4, A Thief's End for the PlayStation 4. It just came out this year. It's the newest game we've played for this podcast so far. And basically in celebration of the fact that we both decided to pick up PlayStation 4s this year. So, from the top, let's discuss our familiarity with the game. We'll start with you.
I pretty much, before playing it, I had seen the E3 demo driving through the streets, and I thought that was pretty cool, and I knew that, of course, the name of the game is A Thief's End, which is pretty leading, so that was pretty much all I knew about it.
Yeah, just like our previous game, Metal Gear Solid 4, I knew going in that this was supposed to be the end for Nathan Drake, but thankfully, this time I didn't go in thinking that, oh, Drake's going to die or anything like that. I knew it was going to be another fun adventure, and I was as well. The only thing I had seen as far as like promotional stuff for this game was the E3 trailer, which was just incredibly impressive and really like shot for shot existed inside the game as well. So. Really great on their part for making sure that what they showed was what they also delivered. How about for the series itself? I've personally played every Uncharted game that's come out so far, including the Vita game, and I've thoroughly enjoyed all of them. And I'm surprised that it took this long for them to hunt down a pirate's treasure.
Yes.
How about you, David?
I played the first game, and I actually got a collection with the first two games, and I think the third one separately a while back. So
for the PlayStation 3?
Yes, for the PlayStation 3. So The second and third games have been on my backlist for a while, but the fourth one, that it just looked really cool in that demo, and I figured that the story is not, I mean, it's not like Metal Gear Solid. The story is pretty self-contained and straightforward, so there didn't seem like much of a reason not to jump into the latest one.
They are very, episodic, and there's slight reference in the fourth one as to his previous adventures, but they don't really go in detail too much, so I don't think anything's been spoiled by playing this one out of order, other than just how the relationships have played out. But yeah, I if you enjoyed this one, thoroughly recommend Uncharted 2. It is still one of my all-time favorite games, just as far as story and gameplay, perfection on the PlayStation 3. We'll move on from here into what attracted us to playing it. And honestly, again, as mentioned, just got the PlayStation 4. And I mean, the Uncharted series has always been a powerhouse for the PlayStation. So I knew that this would be one of the first games that I needed to play on the new PlayStation.
Yeah, and when we were talking about what game to play next, Andrew suggested, and even though I hadn't played the previous two, like I said, just seemed like it was not too much of a barrier, and that, yeah, this was definitely a great showcase for the PS4.
Oh, yes. As I recall it, I basically told him, well, I'll be playing this game this month, and then you just agreed to, hey, I'll also be getting a PlayStation 4. Let's do that as the game of the month. So that worked out nicely. Mm-hmm. But I did strong arm in that this game as far as the order of how we do the choosing. Well, let's move on to what we liked about this game. And I know there was a lot that I liked, but we'll begin with you. What did you like about Uncharted 4, David?
So maybe this is just because I skipped two games, but this was my first time with that kind of stealth combat areas that were really cool. It did kind of remind me of the Dishonored games, which I have played Dishonored 2 pretty recently, except more, you know, it was more of an open area. I guess it's kind of like you can find ways to sneak around, but instead of sneaking through vents, you're just sort of climbing around the exterior walls. And I just thought that was really cool. You could figure out how to sneak around the enemies, except unlike a lot of sneaking games, you had, you know, plenty of options to switch to fighting and take them down, especially if you could, you know, take one out and grab a really good gun, and then you're in a better position to defend yourself than if you had just run in guns blazing to begin with. So I thought there was a lot of options in each one of those areas, and I thought that was really cool.
Oh, yes. One of the things that they definitely improved in this game was the stealth mechanics, and it actually reminded me a lot of their previous game. I believe in order was The Last of Us, which was very stealth heavy, and it feels to me like they brought a lot of what they learned there into this game, because the stealth mechanics, while kind of there for 2 and 3, were nowhere near as fleshed out as they were in this game. If you liked the stealth stuff seen here, super highly recommend playing The Last of Us as well. Just in general, Naughty Dog has been hitting it out of the park with their games over the last two generations. I can't recommend their stuff more, really.
I mean, it's kind of hard to give them a full endorsement because they completely dropped the ball on making an Uncharted racing game after 3. But
that's true. That's true.
But I guess we got some good car segments in Uncharted 4, so
Even think about that. They did add the car for Uncharted 4. I didn't even think about that. So as far as stealth, staying on that topic, stealth was actually one of the things that I maligned about Uncharted 3, because they had started fleshing out the CQC and the stealth in 3, probably because they were, again, working on The Last of Us in tandem. But one of the problems that was with that game is that you would be set up into rooms for where you could either fight or stealth, but no matter what, and you kind of saw it in this game too, there would have to be a second wave. And there were a couple of times where I would take out all but one enemy, and every way I tried to approach that last enemy in Uncharted 3, it would set off that second wave, which would be alerted and would be combat. Like, so it always devolved. Whereas this game, there were times where I could either sneak past without disrupting them at all, or I could take them all out stealth. So I was really impressed with how they improved the stealth combat in Uncharted 4.
I think the only time that I actually made it through without devolving into combat at some point, because some of them I took out maybe everyone
except
it's
really hard,
one
yeah.
or two, and then they would see me and I'd be like, whatever. I thought it was kind of funny. The only time I actually succeeded at leaving the area with total stealth was, when Elena and I were trying to get back to the car. So, of course, Elena, yes. So, yeah. Of course, the one time I actually get past everyone without being noticed, we jump in the car and gun it, and they all start shooting at us as we just drive away.
Oh, see, I was looking through the trophy list after the fact, and there's a trophy for going straight to the vehicle instead of engaging them at all. That I thought was pretty special because, yeah, I didn't even think of that. I was, let's stealth take all these guys out and then safely leave on the vehicle. So I like that they gave the option of, hey, you can just jump in the vehicle and run away if you wanted to.
And there were a couple of times where I realized that I was, close to where the exit was anyway, and even though I had already engaged, I just turned and ran instead of fighting the remaining guys, so that's still a nice option.
One of the things that I really want to point out as a like for Uncharted 4 is the fact that they were really easy, not easy, really like slow to bring you into the game. There was a very extended tutorial section, I would call it. And I just thought it was great that you could be doing fun things without it being like the stressful of, hey, you're going to die if you fail. And the key point of this I would bring up is like when he's up in his study in the attic and he pulls out the gun, the toy gun, and it's a whole thing of you get to like practice aiming and shooting and reloading and getting in and out of the cover, but it totally fits in with his character of like he misses that combat, he misses the
He's
adventure,
also a giant
and
nerd.
he's a kid at heart. Like it was so perfect. Like they found a great way of like bringing a tutorial, but making it feel safe and fun at the same time, and totally within character, within plot. Like super impressed with how they handled the tutorial section, basically of, and even as someone who's played all of the games, like I still appreciated that stuff. I didn't feel at any point, oh, hurry up, let's get to the fun point of climbing on crazy buildings. I was still having fun even in the beginning. So I really liked just how they had the confidence to do it slow and right. Also, it totally helps that the entire time I'm hearing Nolan North's sultry voice speaking. Voice actor crush.
Well, if there's one voice actor that you really like to hear in a video game, it's a good thing it's Nolan North.
And Troy Baker. Like
Yes.
the two voice acting gods in one game.
I know Nolan, it's a whole joke how Nolan North is in everything. Is Troy Baker in a lot of games?
He's basically, if it's a Japanese game, he's a voice actor in it.
Okay.
Like he's in everything as well. But I know they've had other games where they've been in it together, but it's the two of them separately both sort of hold the title just being in every game at some point. Even if it's just as a soldier grunt yelling, hey, get into cover or something, like they're in every game.
Yeah, I just looked up his IMDb and it's like, oh, BioShock Infinite, The Last of Us. So basically he's any gruff shoot man that's not Nolan North is probably
Troy
Troy Baker,
Baker.
which makes it great that he's his brother here.
And I kind of liked that, where even though they had never brought up Sam in any previous game, like they gave a good reason as to why he wouldn't have brought it up, and they, well, just that it was that traumatic sort of for him, but they also fleshed him out well enough that, like, I enjoyed hanging out with him, even if he was a jerk.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my likes, was just having someone running around with you for the vast majority of the game. Most of the time it was Sam, and just having that weird sort of banter that's not like really good writing banter, but it's definitely the sort of stupid jokes I would make with my brother if we're just, or you or a friend if we're just like hanging out for several hours doing something together, and just like I can't even think of any of them off the top of my head, but just stupid jokes that aren't very good, but
I know.
you're just hanging out.
There's some like dad joke level quality
Yes.
stuff in here. And so I remember in interviews for Uncharted 2, that one of the things that they did where they said that, like, not any other major studios really spent the time to do is they would have the voice actors in the studio recording while people would be playing, like a game dev would be playing the game, and they'd be watching, and they would just come up with, like, ad-lib stuff. Huh. And so, like, one of the scenes I remember being an ad-lib from Uncharted 2 and is mentioned again in this one in Uncharted 4 is there was a scene where when the player took Nate into a swimming pool and the voice actor Nolan North just started calling out Marco, Marco, like playing Marco Polo because, you know, he jumped into a pool.
Yeah.
And they paid that again in this one where there's a point where if he jumps into water, he'll call out Marco and Sam will go, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Or just stuff like there's one part with Elena where you're climbing up a cliff and get separated and you're like, all right, I'll meet you up at the top. And then you end up both climbing along the same edge together and they just go, oh, fancy meeting you here. Or yep. Something to that effect. That ad-libbing makes a lot of sense, and that's a good way to do that.
Yeah.
It was also just funny when they were the part where you have to climb up and grab onto these cages with skeletons in them. And right when I grabbed the first one,
yes,
I and Nate said at the exact same time, sorry, buddy.
Perfect. How about something else you like, David?
So the big reveal, of course, towards the end of the game is that Sam was, you know, lying to you the whole time. And first of all, I actually really liked that was presented as an in-game segment because it sort of makes it really believable. Like, you're not listening to this guy tell a story and trying to figure out if he's being genuine. You're like, oh yeah, yeah. Obviously he was broken out by this drug lord Alcazar. I was there. I did that.
Yeah.
And secondly, I liked how there were some things just before it was revealed that he was lying the whole time that were just really confusing, and then they revealed that and it immediately made sense. Like, Nadine going, oh yeah, like I'll trust a Drake again, and it was like, what did I ever do to you? And the same thing when you get caught and Rafe, Sam clearly sees it coming and Rafe punches in the face, and I'm the same thing. I'm like, wait a minute, what? Why are you mad at him? You're the one that screwed both of us over 15 years ago. How come you're the one punching him? And then they, you know, reveal that Sam betrayed both of them earlier, and suddenly that all makes sense.
Yeah, he's a real jerk. I was like, I would not have been as easy to forgive as Nate was after finding out that not only did he get out 2 years ago,
yeah,
but then he's like lying and endangering his marriage. I mean, a lot of that is Nate's fault, but like, still, like, that is not what a brother should ever be doing.
Right.
Like, that is really awful. Yeah. But yes, it was mm-hmm. good foreshadowing, and it really leads into one of the things that I loved about this game that is definitely the strongest in the series, the villains. Like, the previous games, everything's after the first one, they at least spent some effort in introducing the villain beforehand and showing, like, at least who they were and kind of why they're after you.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, they really spent some quality time in explaining and giving time to learn about who these people who would eventually be chasing after them, and honestly gave pretty good reason for them to be so upset with the Drakes. Still doesn't quite explain why they are so insane at going after this treasure, but I mean, like, everyone is insane about that, so okay. But and also, how many men you end up killing.
Yeah.
And at least they pay that off at the end a little bit with her saying, you know what, screw it, I've lost way too much in this endeavor, I'm just going to leave you two fools.
Right.
But, like, Nadine definitely had some of the better, like, better writing overall of the villain, but, yeah, it was definitely one of the highlights, in my opinion, that we were able to interact with them and learn about them in a way that wasn't just, oh, I'm the obligatory villain of this story.
Yeah, I think that I kind of wish, I thought it was interesting that they reveal at the end that Rafe is, like, super jealous of Nate and the fact that he's, so famous. And I thought, I kind of wish that idea had been introduced earlier because it was neat and sort of dropped at the end. But I guess it was also like, oh, here's an explanation of why he hates him so much that has been sort of implied through the game that he...
And also, like, he spent his entire family's fortune and years going after this one treasure.
Right.
And, of course, like... Nathan Drake gets involved, and within a couple weeks, they're on the trail and finding it. Like, there's definitely something going on there which would infuriate anyone who's just spent years and fortunes trying to find this treasure. And this guy who's already world-renowned just walks in and starts making progress.
Right, and then, especially at the end when he's like, you didn't earn this. And he's like, I've spent ridiculous amounts of time and money doing this, bringing people in, paying them, trying to solve the mysteries. And then, like, his, like, at that point, at least, like, his complete psychotic murderous breakdown kind of makes sense for him, because this has clearly been the thing that he's been hung up about his entire life, and they're shoving it in his face at the end. Yeah, that was pretty fun.
One other thing that I want to bring up as far as things that I really liked, is how restrained they were overall of, like in every previous game, the bad guys in the final climax would suddenly have superpowers, and like that's 1, 2, and 3 and the Vita game all had like a overpowered, final form, that made no sense. And in this game, they finally decided, you know what, we don't need to have over-the-top villains to be fighting. And I loved the moment where they're going through the, I guess, kind of the, I want to call them catacombs, but that's not true. The escape cave for the pirate kings to get to their hideaway boat with all the treasure. And Elena and Nate, I don't remember which of them said it, but they start joking about the fact that, basically suggesting that in any of the previous games, there would at this point be pirate ghosts that they'd be having to combat with. But they didn't even go there, and I love the fact that they didn't. I like that this is also one of the most grounded adventures that Nate has in his history of games.
Yeah, I noticed that, and having missed 3 games before this one, I really wasn't sure. Like, is it, did they just become less supernatural after the first one, or is this a big departure? So it sounds like
it was a departure. Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
I won't spoil the third games, but they had definitely shown that they didn't really want to be doing the supernatural stuff anymore there. And as far as like, I remember reading an interview for Uncharted 4 where they said that they were trying to like grow up and like be a little less on the ridiculous side of things, and that's why they've removed a lot of the stuff that was in previous games that were just silly and kind of stupid, like the superpowered villains, like the Donut Drake. Is not in this game, even though he's been in all of the others. Like, they really wanted to show that they're growing up as a studio, as what the director or whatever said.
So no on the racing game then?
Yeah, that's probably why they shied away from that.
Yeah, in case anyone is listening to this and is not familiar with with Naughty Dog, the joke there is that their first series was Crash Bandicoot on the PlayStation 1, and they did Crash Bandicoot 1, 2, and 3, then Crash Team Racing, and then on the PlayStation 2, they did the Jak and Daxter series, and they did 1, 2, 3, then Jak Racing X or something like that, but they did another racing game, and then of course on the PlayStation 3 they did Uncharted 1, 2, 3, and they just skipped right ahead to The Last of Us without the mandatory racing game.
Yep. Anything else that you would like to throw out as a real like?
It was just, even though this was, you know, more grounded in reality, I thought the whole Tale of the Pirates was just sort of funny and increasingly absurd. Just the increasing paranoia and betrayal. So, you know, pirates who, of course, made their fortunes.
Had built this massive city.
With
the, like, working elevators that still work a couple hundred years later.
I mean, well, for one thing, it was just, it was like such an incredible feat, and who knows how long it took for them. It had to have been like, you know, 10 years or something, just for them to have built all of that before everything broke down. But it couldn't have been like, you know, showed up, and as soon as they finished the building, everyone started stabbing each other. But what I was saying was just kind of a funny escalation to me, was that it's all of these pirates who made their fortunes by, you know, killing and stealing from the rest of society, go and found their own society, and then they start killing and stealing from the other people in their village, and they retreat from that to their own little secluded town with just the 12 founders, who then start killing and stealing from each other until it's just the two of them, and then they, you know, every and two, of course, kill each other while trying to steal all of the gold that they stole from the other pirates that stole them from the villagers that stole them from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you'd think at one point, you know, Thomas too would have been like, maybe I should get out of here. But clearly at that point he was too obsessed with the gold.
All of them were. Yeah. It definitely.
Also,
although,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the fact that they were all willing to meet in a room and treaty it up at the dinner there, like, I find that the hardest thing to believe at that point.
Yes.
Like, they've already flooded everything and thousands dead probably, and why at that point are they going to meet up and share drinks? I don't know. I couldn't believe that one, but it was a pretty cool, like, just scene there,
right? And clearly, I mean, they did play up the you know, incredible paranoia a lot, but it's like, okay, you stole more gold than you knew what to do with, so you founded your own separatist colony where you're in charge of everything, and then you decide to steal the gold and leave, and what, where do you go after that? What
what's the plan?
What, where do you go that's like higher than building your own society with all of the excess gold, with all of these incredible ostentatious buildings,
and having such a convoluted way to even find out where this colony
is? I'm not sure how they got that many colonists, unless you know, at some point they're like, oh well, we have these 12 pirates that, you know, followed this complicated invitation and finally got here, but we need people to actually build, so let's just, you know, send a boat and get some people and bring them here.
Yeah.
that was ridiculous, but I still put that under likes because it was kind of a fun, kind of silly.
The last thing I would like to bring up as far as, like, a really strong like for Uncharted 4 is that, with knowing that this is supposed to be the last of Nathan Drake, and they really do a great job of giving him a reason why he wants to get out. Like, he wanted to get out before, but this is that, like, that one more time. I remember the good old days. Oh man, those good old days are not what it turns out I want to be doing for the rest of my life. And they pay it off, like they give him a solid ending there, but then they go the one step further of showing the epilogue. That was just genius, of showing, hey, this is what happens to Nate after his adventuring ends, and showing that even though his grand adventures have ended, he hasn't stopped living, that he has continued with his wife to do a TV show, to raise a family, and while it may not be that, like, normal life that they were striving for at the beginning of the game, or the adventure that he thought he wanted, it definitely looks like he found the adventure that his heart was after.
Yeah, that
at the end. And
epilogue was great.
It was just, it was fantastic. Perfect in every way, in my opinion.
And the sort of realization that, you know, that Elena basically stated that, you know, maybe we can have an adventurous life without constantly being shot at by pirates and private armies.
Yeah.
And we can find a middle ground where we're not doing a lot of paperwork, we're going out and seeing the world, but less guns.
Yeah. So, like, that really was, that took me by surprise and was, so it was perfect. Like, that is how every game should strive to, like, end their story. They're not necessarily, like, each game, but, like, an overarching series like this. Like, here's what happens to these characters. Here's, you don't have to worry about them or anything. It's great. I loved that.
That was just a really so, great wrap-up.
Yes. Let's move into things that we did not really like, and chief amongst those for me, I really disliked the multiple choice dialogue in this game, and I was so thankful that ended after, like, what, 9 chapters? It was definitely before the halfway point that they decided, you know what, we're not going to ask you to do multiple choice anymore.
So maybe it's because I played the first third of the game and then took a break for a week or two and then played the rest all in one go. I completely forgot that it even had those at all.
It was, I hated them. It really, like, the scene, it is so cinematic. And the dialogue is just so well-timed and delivered, and then just at these points, it decides, oh, hey, we're just going to pause things and let you choose what Nate says next. And it's always inconsequential stuff, but it just is nothing but disruptive, and I found it infuriating. How about you? What was something that you did not like about Uncharted 4?
It was mostly just in that, like, the second flashback, which was, the backstory just started to get a little too convoluted for me, which was when they went to, well, for one thing, the whole sneaking into the mansion level was just sort of, it had, for me, it had the horror movie vibe of every time I looked at anything, I was expecting, you know, whoever owned the mansion to jump out and start yelling at me. So that was kind of weirdly tense. But of course, when she does, then she goes, "Oh, you're her boys. Oh, this is fine. I want you to have this. I'll clear everything up with the police." For some reason, she tells you to sneak back out instead of just saying, "You wait here, I'll talk to the police and explain that you're fine," but then she has a heart attack.
Yes.
Conveniently, after calling the police, but before she could tell them not to arrest you, and that was a bit much. And then also later, maybe this is just because they're kids and they're paranoid, but they're like, "No, we have to run away. We have to change our identities. We can't go back to the orphanage or to your job. This is it. Our lives are over." I mean, they don't know who you were.
All they know is that it was two teenage boys that were seen running from the scene.
Broke into this house and then ran away. You don't need to change your identities. You didn't get caught.
What I want to point out as far as that mansion mm-hmm. is that you explore every nook and cranny of that house. And it is all dark. It is all, like, dust covers or boxes, and like there's clearly no one there at this time, and then she's just suddenly there in the same room as you, just out of nowhere she's there. Like, how did you miss her? You couldn't have. I that was definitely a weird moment.
She's really good at the stealth. She hid in the tall grass.
Oh yes, the tall grass of the bookcases.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely agree with that.
And also related to that same scene was when they reveal that they changed their names to Drake.
Yeah.
Which I thought, like you said, they actually handled this whole idea of, oh, he had a brother we didn't hear about, but there's a reason he never talked about him. The whole thing with the name, though, was that I definitely remember in the first game, he made a big deal about how, oh no, I have to find this treasure. Sir Francis Drake was my ancestor. This is, you know, the family thing. And so,
well,
I thought that
was weird. As I recall, they do mention in this game the whole how their mom believed that Sir Francis Drake did have children, even though the popular story or whatever was that he had no children. As far as them taking on the name of Drake, like that was a known thing from previous games that it's already been covered that Nate had adopted that name.
Oh,
so
I guess if it came up in the first game, I forgot if it came up in the others.
I don't remember if that came up in the first game that he had like adopted that name, mm-hmm. but it was definitely in the third game, and it might have been in the second game that he had adopted the name.
Okay.
So I kind of like, oh, so this is the moment where they decided to take the name. So I didn't really look into that as hard as probably you did.
I probably made sense in the context in the previous game then. It didn't really make sense to just put that in for no reason to me, but I guess that's the reason then.
As far as, like, story elements that didn't land as well they should have, or at least I was constantly yelling at Nate the entire time of, like, Sam introduces himself and he's like, oh, hey, I have a wife. You have to meet her. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to lie to my wife and say I'm going to this dig instead of telling her the truth and going on this adventure with you. And then I'm on this adventure and it's becoming far more dangerous than it was originally planned. I'm still going to lie to my wife. And then she finds them and he still does not want to talk it out with his wife. It's still, oh, I'll send basically the father figure of Victor Sullivan. I'll send my partner, more or less, father figure to take care of my wife. I've got more important things, and I'm upset with her for some reason. And it's just like, Nate, you idiot. I hate you. You are doing everything wrong. I was impressed that when she does show up and save him, that they don't just immediately forgive and forget. Like, there's a very sizable, it's basically that entire chapter of them driving is nothing but them occasionally bringing it back up and talking about it and working through it a lot faster than in reality, but also I know it would not be entertaining to do it for real, that kind of conversation,
right.
But they at least showed that, yes, this isn't something that is solved in one-liners like Nate is used to.
Right.
And I was impressed by that in the end, but the entire time leading up to it, I just, why? Why? Of all of the times to give me an option to choose the dialogue, it would have been on the cell phone, "Hey, honey, I'm going to go look for a pirate treasure with my long-lost brother."
Right. Right. Especially since, you know, as we see later on, she probably would not have approved, but it's not like this is something she's totally unfamiliar with. She's been on his adventures, and at the beginning she was like, you know, you missed the life, don't you? And he's like, no. So,
well, clearly, yes.
It was like she had given him an opening to kind of admit that he missed those adventures, and he was the one that said, no, obviously I'm perfectly happy, you know, filling out paperwork. And mm-hmm.
And they bring that up in that chapter where they're talking about, he does finally admit, you know, I said at the time I was lying to protect you, but really I was lying to protect myself. Mm-hmm. And that's a good moment
for him to realize that.
It's still just like,
yeah. Yeah, I agree that that was really frustrating.
Yeah.
The whole like, well, I guess I'll just send you, my friend, to go talk to my wife for me, and I'm sure that
instead
will work
of
out
going
fine.
After her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it does, because, you know, he's the hero of the story, but I mean, in a real world setting, you go after her.
Yeah. And he realized, like, even before she shows up again, he realizes he really screwed up, and he's just like, well, I guess I just ruined my marriage.
Anything you would like to bring up at this point as things you did not like?
There were a few times when they had the big open combat segments where I just couldn't figure out where I was supposed to go next. And also a couple times I just couldn't find the one guy that was still there, and I knew I was in combat mode, but couldn't find him, and it was, and even when I cleared everyone out, I would just stand around and look around and be like, okay, and now what? Which isn't so bad, because I eventually found the path, but it was just a little bit grating in a game where usually at least your goal is crystal clear, where you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a minor complaint.
I can't really think of that happening for me at any time. Even in the sections where you're, like, driving, and there's some pretty open sections with some lengthy, like, offshoots where all there is down there is treasures to find. Mm-hmm. I can't really think of a point where I got lost as to where I was supposed to be heading next.
It was usually, like I said, where you would... And maybe it was because I would also sort of forget which direction I was headed before entering the combat area, because then you have to stop and sneak around. And one that I remember in particular was in the cliffside buildings, where you're kind of following along the cliff as you go, and then it gets to the point where what you need to actually do is go to a building that's out on the corner away from the cliff and climb up so that you can jump across. And I actually, before I figured that out, I looked up and I realized, oh, higher up the cliff, there's some place that looks like I need to go there. And that was correct. I just didn't realize you needed to go away, then up, then across. So that, I was just wandering back and forth for a while looking for a way up.
The closest that happened to me, in the section, after you're stranded on the island, after the storm, I know there's a couple of like cliffside areas where there's multiple levels of verticality, and you're going like in and out of a like cavernish area. Mm-hmm. And there was one point in there where I got turned around and just did not recognize that I was retracing my steps, just because I hadn't looked at things in that direction before. So I did get turned around once there. but it was pretty, like, once I got back to a, like, there's enough of those sections where you drop from somewhere where you can't climb back up that you just know, oh, hey, this is a starting point. I must have turned myself around. But that's the only time I can really think of. But I can definitely see it. They, the Uncharted series, unlike a lot of the same sort of style, the Uncharted series definitely has obvious as far as like climbable surfaces are either white or yellow, mm-hmm. but they are far better like meshed into the scenery than a lot of the other sort of climbing games. Most notably, I remember Enslaved, where sections that you're supposed to climb would literally glow.
Right.
And so I can definitely see where if you just aren't noticing that yellow or something that you would miss, oh, hey, this is something, or red, that this is something I should be climbing now. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like, I never ran into that particular problem, I guess.
Well, yeah, it was, like I said, it's kind of a minor complaint, but it was mostly because the rest of the game, like, it's not so much that I couldn't see what was climbable as I wasn't sure what direction I needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the game, that's okay. pretty clear, especially when they have some, you know, looming mountain or landmark or something, so that
oh, yeah.
even if you're in an open area, you're like, oh, I need to go in that direction.
It's really impressive to me that, like, that first vehicle section where it points out, hey, you need to get to that volcano. And you really do travel a huge distance, and it mm-hmm. never feels like they skip a moment or something. So you really must have traveled that distance, I think.
I was wondering that through the whole game. Cause
compressed,
they did,
but...
they did a lot of, like, here's a thing in the distance, now you need to make your way there, and a lot of what I wondered if they were, like, you know, maybe making it a little bit closer than you had really traveled every time you lost sight of it, or if it was just, you know, some kind of trick of the eye, because it...
Yeah.
Like, when you were going through the flooded city, for example, it seemed like that was a long distance away.
That house, yeah. That house looked a lot farther away, but they're, like, the one of those sections you got into a building that fell apart on you, and you just sort of slid through, and the water currents would help carry you. So, like, I can see how that stuff would have helped move you there faster.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe? Or maybe in that section where the building's falling apart, it actually, like, did some cutting and just ended you closer than you actually would have been. I don't know. It would be really neat to see a, like, how this game was made behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The last sort of, like, fiddly complaint, minor complaint I have is in every previous Uncharted game, you've had the option of picking up thrown grenades and throwing them back. That was, for whatever reason, removed from this game. And just CQC in general took a step backwards from previous games, or specifically took a step backwards from the third game.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely felt those things were missing this time around, and I would like to hear why they decided to remove those things. That, I mean, they had spent, like, the grenade thing has been in every previous game. Or, like, the CQC thing, like, they had been building up to that. Why did they step backwards from it? I would like to know. But it didn't hurt the game, really.
Yeah. Oh, I remembered one last complaint, which was in an otherwise fantastic segment, which was when you are running from the APC with the, you know, the gun on top and...
okay, yeah.
Or, well, just before that, where you wash up onto the beach, and this thing's shooting at you, and you have to steal an RPG launcher and shoot at mm-hmm. it, and
yep.
Which was great, because these trucks have been a problem for most of the game, and you finally get to just blow one up, and then a second one drives down, and I had already picked up a second rocket launcher, so I was like, okay, I'll just shoot this one. And it didn't work, because I was supposed to run away and get into a really long and elaborate chase sequence, but...
Yeah.
So I was just like, what, two rockets killed last room, all right, and I keep firing and firing and it doesn't blow up, and then have to go through a long and elaborate chase sequence until Sully tosses me another rocket launcher and it works this time.
Yeah. I had actually already had there's rocket launchers available before that point, and I had actually been carrying one, so one of those two scenes turned out to be a lot easier than they needed to be, just because I had come prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you'd like to lodge as a complaint?
No, most of those are pretty minor anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed this game.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am complaining about is honestly very minor overall. Definitely didn't hurt how much I liked this game. How about any particular noteworthy moments of achievement, frustration, or just in general, like, your favorite section of the game?
My favorite specific moment was during the Pirate Sigil puzzle underneath the clock tower, where
okay, yeah,
Nate doesn't recognize these symbols, so he's sending them to Sam, and then you get to some that Sam doesn't even recognize, and there's one that looks like a monkey standing on one leg with its arms and legs held up, and I was like, that's funny, that looks just like the monkey Kung Fu from Escape from Monkey Island. And then they don't recognize it, so you go to look at the pictures, and one of the pictures is Guybrush Threepwood from Monkey Island.
Oh, I didn't catch that reference. That's awesome.
And it's just absolutely a portrait of Guybrush, and it's one of the ones that's, like, slightly burned, so there's no name, and, like, I mean, they give you another hint because, you know, one of the names is very obviously not European, but it was just great because it's like the one pirate whose name you never hear. And you have to figure out whose symbol matches which portraits that you can match up the dots. So it's like, okay, well, obviously the fighting monkey is Guybrush Threepwood.
Wow, I had not even made that connection. I'll have to look that picture up afterwards and see if I recognize him now that I know what I'm looking for. As far as, like, one of my favorite moments, and it was totally inconsequential, but I just really loved when walking through the market that there's several moments where you can just sort of, like, interact with either the vendor, or he'll say something, Nate will say something, or Victor will say something. But I loved that I had purchased an apple and was eating the apple, and then I saw a lemur and I was able to interact with the lemur. I was like, oh, that's so cute.
Oh,
like,
that's
lemur.
Great.
And then I moved away from the lemur and the lemur came up on Nate's shoulder and was on and I was like, oh, that is so adorable. And then the lemur grabs the apple and runs away with it. I was like, oh, that is so awesome. And of course an achievement then pops, but it was just like that was awesome. They're totally rewarding me for interacting with stuff as moving
That's
around
great.
This market.
I missed that completely. I did,
yeah.
However, get to the point where you get a treasure, which is, you know, one of the treasures that is logged and gets you unlocked
yep.
later, but actually having to haggle at the market to buy it.
Oh, really? I missed that one.
Yeah, there's, like, at the very beginning of the market, there's a vendor with, I think it was a compass, and you walk over, and there's a little interact button, and he, you know, Nate says something to Sully about how this was from Avery's time, and asks where the guy found it, and he's like, oh, for you, special price, $500. Very cheap discount. and Nate's like, no, I'm not going to pay that. But you can hit interact again, and he'll be like, this is worth, like, $25. I'll give you $25 for it. And he goes, no, $400, cheapest. And they go back, and you have to, like, keep interacting, and eventually they settle on, like, $200 or something. And then I got a little pop-up that was treasure acquired, compass.
Oh, that's awesome. I missed that one. See, there is so much detail in this game. Not even just in a visual. There's a whole lot of visual.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea how they designed and built this game. There's so much detail everywhere. But the fact that there's also just as far as the multiple offshoots of areas or the interactions that many people will never actually see, not even just because most people don't finish games reportedly, but also the fact that, like, there's so, like, you'd have to scour every nook and cranny of these games to see every interaction like that or find every treasure. I think I only found, like, half the treasures in this game, half the notes in this game, and I thought I was doing really well as far as, like, scouring.
Mm-hmm.
But
I found a lot less, but there was also a certain amount of, I put most of the game off until a few days before the podcast, so I wasn't, like, rushing through it, but I wasn't going out of my way to look for weird offshoots. I did look around the market, though, because that was a fun scene, and after I had that interaction, I wanted to look for other things, but I missed the apple and the lemur.
Another thing that I do want to especially mention is the, as far as a frustration, was that you walk into Avery's room or his office, whatever it was called, his study, of his manor. And you're looking for the secret passage, and I'm like, straight away, it's the globe. The globe unlocks the passage. And I go over there, and I'm trying to interact with it. Nothing, can't seem to do it. You find the lighter, and then it's like, oh, hey, this lighter is a clue. That must mean that one of these objects nearby unlocks the passage. I again go straight to the globe, and it's like, still not letting me interact with it. I have to interact with every other object in the room, or in that corner of the room. And then, still nothing. Elaine is the one who then walks over to the globe and goes, hey, there's a bloody thumbprint or something here, presses it, and then there you go, it's unlocked. And I'm just like, damn it, game! I knew this! I guess that would be kind of like the car that you can't destroy until it says, okay, now you can destroy it.
Yeah.
How about you? Anything else that you want to mention?
This was a little frustrating, but mostly I just felt stupid when I realized it. But during the big, chase scene where you're trying to rescue Sam and he's on the bike, and you loop your rope onto this truck that's, you know, dragging you along, and you pull yourself up, I spent a few cycles of that just trying to shoot everybody while hanging from the rope, and eventually just ran out of ammo. And I couldn't figure out what to do next. Because when you're swinging on a rope and it's safe to jump, he'll hold out his hand. That's the way it works in the entire game. He never did that when I was swinging from the rope on the back of the truck. And finally I just thought, wait, maybe it wants me to do that anyway. So I hit jump and jump into the back of the truck. And suddenly that whole segment is so much easier.
That's awesome. Oh, that's awesome.
Because, yeah, all of a sudden I have cover and more ammo because I can grab this other guy's gun, and people are jumping on, and this was obviously...
And your car eventually starts exploding and you jump to another car. Yeah.
Yeah. So
they've done similar scenes in previous games. So I kind of like automatically knew, okay, this is that section.
Mostly ended up feeling stupid, but I still feel a little justified because, like I said, I thought, you know, maybe I need to do something else before I can get in the truck, because I would try to reach in that direction and he wouldn't. Maybe it was because I was holding a gun, but he wouldn't do the thing he always does where he reaches one hand out to show, yeah, that's a safe place to jump off the rope.
So I want to bring up in the rainforest island thing, you get a climbing spike mm-hmm. that you use, because occasionally there's these like porous areas where the next ledge is just out of reach and you need to jump, spike, and then you can either mm-hmm. jump or climb up the rest of the way to get to that ledge.
Apparently Elena and just keeps one in her backpack. She doesn't have to steal them off of dead pirates, which seems like a good plan.
Yeah. So there's this section where shortly-ish after that, where I then turned the game off, went and did something else for a day, came back the next day, booted it up, and I was in a I was just like facing where I was supposed to jump to next. There's the little like white lines, and it was long enough where I had forgotten about this porous section that I had just learned about in the previous session. So I see the white lines, I make my jump, and he misses the jump. And I'm like, well, maybe that was a glitch. So it loads the checkpoint back up. I do the jump again. He misses, falls dead, reload. And I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not supposed to jump there. Maybe I'm supposed to jump somewhere else. And I'm trying to jump, like, maybe jump to an angle. But it directs you. Like, when you're jumping to this wall, it actually directs you of, no, you're supposed to jump this way. Like, he definitely jumps that way, no matter how I'm, like, trying to edge him another direction. And it took me about 10 times until I finally realized, oh, wait, that's right. They just added this new mechanic of a spike. So at that point, I realized, and I remembered for the rest of the game, because it does it a couple more times, but that you're supposed to do the jump and then spike.
Right.
And he drags the spike a little bit to show that, hey, this was a hard jump. But and then he can grab the white ledge. But like in every previous game, as long as there's a white ledge, he'll make that jump.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really weird. but that was the closest I ever got to being stuck, and it was just because I had forgotten about a new ability of his.
That was the oh, there's a new Tomb Raider with new mechanics that we can mine edition.
Oh, I see. I haven't played the Tomb Raider games. That's definitely on my list. And have you played the second one or just the first one?
Just the first new Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was...
I don't think anyone talks about the original series anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, that was definitely a thing where you had a pickaxe that you could, you know, only in specific, I think, icy sections or other porous or, you know, that it would have a specific area where you could jump and hit the pike in, the spike, the pickaxe.
Okay.
Except... unlike in Uncharted 4, I think you could just cross a whole section by jumping and grabbing again.
Oh, really? Yeah, you can't do that here.
I tried to do a few times, but it doesn't work for Nate.
He very visually, as you leave he then pulls it back out. He only ever has that one. So, good attention to detail, I guess. Anything else you would like to mention as a achievement or frustration or anything with the game?
The whole clock section was just really cool, and the way that you
were
climbing across moving parts and then sort of figuring out how to interact with these moving clock parts as you're climbing up, and then everything goes horribly wrong and now you're having to like do all of the same interactions but really quickly because everything's falling apart. And so
yeah.
Now you have to really climb up the gear quickly and jump across and things swinging back and forth. And I thought that whole sequence was great.
That was definitely a high point of the game. And then it's immediately followed by the E3 trailer chase, which I did not do anywhere near as good as the E3 demo portrayed it. Like... I would hit dead ends and not real dead ends, just I would clip a corner and get stuck because I'm a terrible driver.
Yeah, I did that a couple of times, but I think I was mostly okay. There was one part where you had to jump or you had to like ramp up some stairs and go off, and I just from the thing shooting me, I died just as I was ramping off of the stairs. So my first thought was, oh, wait, I guess I'm not supposed to go there because I died when I went off the stairs. Well, where else am I supposed to go? And eventually I figured out what happened because Sully keeps yelling at you to go up the stairs.
Yeah. Overall, your partners are always helpful in, like, pointing out, hey, we should be going here next, or, and the in-game will occasionally just do the whole, like, press R3 and look at what you should be focusing on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I loved Uncharted 4. Any final thoughts? I can't think of anything else to say at this point.
Maybe Uncharted 4 was the real treasure. No, I've just been waiting the whole... I've been waiting for about an hour and 5 minutes to say that. That's all I've got.
Okay. Yeah, it was fantastic. And I'm glad that they're not done with the series as a whole, that they're going to maybe look at this whole, like, side story with Nadine and Chloe.
I just found out about that when I was looking up the other games right before we recorded, and I really like Nadine. I'm excited to see her in another game.
I want to see her as not a bad guy.
Yeah. And I could totally see her as a protagonist now that she's, you know, lost her entire private army because the Drakes just kept dragging them into grass and breaking their necks or shooting them.
Yeah. You kill a lot of people in this game. It really, you go beyond a point of a mercenary going, yeah, you know, all of those buddies I had who are now dead, I'm going to totally try to fight you. No?
Yeah, remember that time where Nate was totally shocked that Sam, like, threatened to shoot Nadine as a hostage after both of them murdered 100 of their soldiers on the way
I
there?
Know.
But murder, Sam, that's dark.
It is one of those things that, and I really liked that there were a couple of chapters where there was just no combat, like the boat section where you're going mm-hmm. arrow to arrow. That lasts a pretty long time where there's just zero combat.
Yeah, that
and
was just like
I'm glad
a fun
that they
treasure hunt
pulled away. Yeah,
fun treasure hunt with your bro. Oh yeah, that is one thing that's not really directly related to the game, but I do have an older brother that's 5 years older than me, and, you know, especially, like, during the first flashback, I was just getting that vibe of, oh, my older brother showed up, he's so cool, we're gonna hang out, this is great.
Yeah.
My brother didn't, like, take me swinging across rooftops, but he did show up with, you know, DVDs.
A fancy motorcycle?
No, he'd show up with DVDs like Akira and Ghost in the Shell. And,
oh, there you go.
And Strange Days, which were definitely not age appropriate for me being, I don't know, 9 or 10. But so that was
probably not.
That was my cool older brother feeling during some of the game, and definitely during that first flashback, and also kind of during the treasure hunting segment boating around the islands, where it was just like, oh, now you're older and you can do, you know, you can go out and, like, do things with your brother on an equal, but at the heart of it there's still a feeling of like, yeah, it's so cool that he's hanging out with me. But maybe that's just me.
That feeling was definitely there in the flashbacks. And, like, the whole hanging out, putting on the hats in the mansion, and, like, taking the fun photo together. Like, it was definitely we're hanging out, we're not really here to break into a house, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed Uncharted 4, and I'm glad that we played it. And I think that wraps it up for us on that game. So, mm-hmm. Next month, January, we're going to keep the PlayStation 4 theme going. And we'll be playing Infamous Second Son, mm-hmm. Came out in 2014, so please play along with us.
Yep, I'm excited because I really like the Infamous series, and that was one of the first games that I put on my list for when I eventually get a PlayStation 4.
It's definitely been on my list, but I will have to say, spoiler a little bit, that I did not like Infamous 2 all that much. So I'm really hoping this is a good one. I'm crossing my fingers on this one. What?
I said that's the hope.
That's the hope. Okay.
That it's a good one.
So, yes. So January 29th will be Infamous Second Son. Stick with us. After this, we'll be going through some of our favorite games of the year, or that we played this year, for myself at least. But just wrapping up 2016 and what we've been up to. Otherwise, if you are done here, have a good year, good holiday, and see you next time. All right. So I played 27 games so far this year. That'll probably be it for this year. And I could not narrow it down to a top five. I had to go with a top six for myself. How was your year in gaming, David?
I didn't really count it up, but I played a good number of games. Maybe not that many. There are, you know, a lot of games that I started and didn't finish.
Sure.
Looking down my list, about 20, 25 games that I did finish, which is not too bad. So I think, I thought you asked before to pick a favorite game of 2016, and I'm glad that that wasn't the case, because it was very hard to try to narrow it down, but I could do a top five or top six, maybe.
Okay. So it's probably not surprising anyone. Uncharted 4 instantly was added to my top six games of this year. Of games that I played, Uncharted 4 was just an amazing experience through and through. Instantly one of my top six. I can't really choose which game was my all-time favorite, though. But let's just go. You can name five or six, and I'll name my six. So how about, what was one of your top games now?
Well, I also put Uncharted 4 on my list, because that was fantastic, and for all of the reasons we just talked about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, we've already thoroughly discussed it, Uncharted 4, so let's move on. One of the games that I played that just really fell in love with was Need for Speed Most Wanted, the 2012 game. I played through two Need for Speed games this year. I had that itch, I guess, for a good arcade-style racing game. And of the two, The Run and Most Wanted, just Most Wanted was a superb game that I would definitely recommend. Anyone who's a fan of arcade-style racing, if you liked Burnout Paradise, you will love Most Wanted 2012.
Another one of my, I was going to say, I unfortunately did not replay Undertale this year, so I can't put Undertale on my list. That said, because that was 2015 and I played it in 2015, that said, Hyper Light Drifter was a real highlight of the year for me. That was a Kickstarter game that was really anticipated and came out, and it just surpassed all of my expectations. It was definitely a game that I can see why other people aren't as big a fan of it as I am, but it hit a certain level of difficulty that was just perfect for me, that I never got too completely frustrated, but there were a lot of points where I had to play and replay to get through a combat, or to really really hunt through an area to find all of the secrets, and it was really satisfying, and the gameplay was really smooth, and I actually took something like 100 screenshots of just a travel log of not during combat, but just of the different environments, and I actually made that my my wallpaper folder since then. So my desktop wallpaper is just a rotating travelogue of the Drifter standing in, you know, a snowy environment with a weird deer creature staring at him, or in the, you know, standing on a pillar in the water, in the water area, all of these just beautiful environments. So if I had to pick one top game of this year, that would be it.
Oh, really? Wow, that's pretty high praise. I own Hyperlight Drifter. I funded that same Kickstarter, but I just have not gotten around to playing that one yet. It is high on my list, mm-hmm. though. High on my list.
It actually, after release, they did update it for 60 FPS, which is nice. Cool. Before it was locked at 30. So, and in most cases, I wouldn't even care. But it just, for how good the game looks and for how smooth it felt, I feel like that's a really nice upgrade.
Okay. The next game I would like to list is The Witness. This was a puzzle game that I borrowed from you. I don't even know if you've played it yet, but...
Oh, I have.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
I got really into The Witness, and I love games where I'm pulling out a piece of paper to figure out the puzzle, and The Witness was just constantly that, where it was always... Like, the next puzzle was familiar enough where I knew what I had to do, but complex enough where I needed to write it down. And it was such a fantastic game, in my opinion. Definitely had problems, but it again scratched that puzzle itch that I had this year, and I think I want to go back and replay it. It's one of the few puzzle games where I actually want to go back and explore more, because there's definitely deeper levels of puzzle that I didn't even get into on my first playthrough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've played it, and I've gone through several cycles of playing it for a while and getting stuck and taking a break and going back to it. I just haven't probably made very much progress overall, but I've definitely completed a few sections.
I love the fact that, like, it's a one island, but the island is broken up into different themes as far as how the puzzles work.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you do get hit in a just point where I do not understand what you're trying to convey here, you can go to another section of the island where the puzzles then reset to a, like, introducing this new concept and building upon it. And, oh, hey, I can see how this can now, like, that thought process can apply to this other puzzle now. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. I could not put that game down. What's next on your list, David?
Overwatch was a lot of fun, and... It's a game that I'm constantly thinking I should go back and play, but I don't actually go back and play it that often. I'm actually planning to do that some over this weekend, since there's a holiday event, and
there is.
I feel like there's actually a lot about it that reminds me of Splatoon and how I played Splatoon last year, but I feel like after a certain point, I only went back into Splatoon when there was a Splatfest. I'll probably just jump back into Overwatch every time there's a holiday event, and that's fine.
Sure. Yeah, that is fine. And that game is, like, I think it's getting all of the Game of the Year awards right now.
Except Jim Sterling, which...
Oh, except...
Right.
So, I know he really dislikes how they've been handling the whole loot box thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that just jumped to mind, because I remember his whole video about how it's disqualified for that one reason, no matter how much he actually likes the game.
He is very pro-consumer at times.
Mm-hmm.
overly so maybe, but I can kind of agree with that thought process that the loot boxes are not done in a user-friendly way. It definitely feels in a way where they are enticing you to pay money to get more, and I definitely, that's a bit of a turnoff, but I also realize that I think all of that stuff is cosmetic, so it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
But I can understand that there's some psychological trickery going on there. But the game itself looks like a lot of fun. I've had fun on free weekends. It's just I already know myself and that I'm not going to ever put in enough time to warrant a $40 purchase. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I think it's gotten down to $35 occasionally, but it's still, that's a bit too much for how much I know I would play it.
Yeah, that's fair.
But in that same sort of vein, I did play Rocket League for the first time this year, and I have been addicted to that one. And anytime I have 5 to 10 minutes, I will boot that game up. And sometimes that's just, I'll boot the PlayStation 4 up, and if I don't already have a game started, I'll boot up Rocket League, play a match or two there, and then move on to whatever serious game I want to. But just that shorter mission time, the simplistic but chaotic gameplay of just driving into a ball, and it is so much fun, and I've had a great time with Rocket League. So easily one of my favorites of this year.
Nice, nice. Yeah, another one that I had a ton of fun with very recently was Dishonored 2, because I loved the first Dishonored, and I think the second one was just did a great job of, with both the story and the gameplay, taking the first game and expanding on it and taking it in interesting directions. There's a couple of levels that have their own little gimmicks. One was a little frustrating because they also disable your powers, which I can see how the gimmick in that level would be weird.
That could sound frustrating.
Weird to interact with, but it was also, it wasn't even so much that I didn't, like, I missed, you know, being able to zip around and do the shadow walk sneaking. It was just that the dark vision, I didn't even really use so much for combat, but the fact that it would highlight things you can pick up in the environment, and I just didn't even see that as a power so much as a utility, and then I couldn't do that for the whole level. But anyway, that aside, it was really neat how they experimented with that, and it was just a lot of really interesting world building and lots of cool little notes that you can find that people leave behind, and that was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed going through, and even though I accidentally skipped an entire level by solving the ridiculously complicated, like, word puzzle, basically, instead of going off and getting involved in a gang war to get someone to solve it for me, which was sort of the primary thing that you're supposed to do.
Oh, wow. I did really enjoy Dishonored 1, so I'm excited to check out Dishonored 2 eventually, probably next year, probably. But I haven't had that chance yet. Probably will borrow the game from you.
Oh, and Dishonored 2 also deserves a special shout-out for... the first one was kind of infamous for having supposedly non-lethal takedowns that were supposedly the merciful option that were possibly worse than death. I did a zero alerts, zero kills playthrough of the first Dishonored, which is what I like to do whenever there's like a sneaking game like that. Dishonored 2, I did zero alerts, one kill, because one of the non-lethal options was just it was just too much, and I decided I couldn't do it. I'm just gonna be I'm gonna be merciful here and just kill him instead.
Wow. I would love to find out what that is, but no spoilers, man.
Yeah.
No spoilers.
So I think that the fact that a game made me that uncomfortable deserves special mention.
Yeah, definitely. Next on my list for games that I played this year, GTA 5. I didn't play this one until the PC version had come out, and I then waited even longer for it to be discounted. But I had a blast with this game. I don't think it hit the same level of addiction as GTA 4 did, but it was definitely a lot of fun. And I will hopefully go back to it at some point, just to have fun. It is nothing but fun.
Cool. Yeah, I still have not really gotten into a GTA game. I think I tried one of the earlier ones on Steam and played it for a while, but maybe if I should probably try 4 or 5, and 'cause kind of like Uncharted, you don't really need to play the earlier ones and
Oh
it would,
no.
I'm sure, be a lot more a lot easier to get into as a modern game.
Yeah, as long as what I kind of love about the Rockstar games is that you're doing terrible, awful things, but it's done with such a satire to it that it never feels awful. So it's just a lot of fun.
Another great game that was, I mentioned this on Facebook. If Steam had this as an option for, I thought it was cool before it started winning awards. This is the game I would have voted for, which was Owlboy. That was a lot of fun, and it was another game with really beautiful art and environments and animations, and it's a good thing it did since it was in development for 10 years, and I think I
Wow.
played a demo of it at a trade show here in Austin like 5 years ago. But I don't know that it was, worth that much of the developers' lives, but as a game it is a lot of fun, and it has great art and music, and I don't know if it's a totally unique mechanic, but it's certainly unusual in that it switches between running and jumping, and basically just you jump up and can just fly and shoot, so it's kind of a platformer slash twin stick shooter.
Oh, neat. That one hasn't really been high on my list, but I will have to check it out eventually. The last game that I would like to mention that I played this year, even though I think it came out in like, oh man, it was early 2000s, right? Like, or not 2000s, like 2010, I think. 2009 maybe? Fallout New Vegas. When everyone was playing Fallout 4, I decided, you know what? I'm going to find my copy of Fallout New Vegas that I never actually played, and I'm going to sit down and play it. And it has some of the worst bugs I've had to deal with in a Fallout game, but it was a lot of fun. And the way that the story is portrayed, the way that you make those decisions, was just kind of surprising and stuck with me. And even though at the time I finished playing it, I probably wouldn't have included it as one of my favorites of the year. The fact that I have continued to think about the decisions that I had made while playing and just some of the areas and experiences I had while playing it, I have to give it a mention. I have to include it as a game that has stuck with me throughout the year. I love the fact that you're just a courier and you go through this crazy adventure. You decide the fate of New Vegas, and no one asked you to decide this fate. You just decided to do it for you. And I don't think any of the endings you can inspire are good endings. They're all in some way troubled. But that's so perfectly fitting for just some carrier to come into a town and decide, I'm going to make these decisions. Of course things aren't going to turn out perfectly. It's a really super flawed game, but it is well done, and I'm really surprised that I'm still thinking about it at the end of the year, even though I played it, I don't know. I think that was an early, February, March time frame that I played this game.
Yeah, I think of all of the sort of 3D era Fallout games, that one is the one that I've heard the most praise for the mission design and the choices that you can make and sort of the impact you can have on the world.
Mm-hmm. Have you not played it?
No.
Oh, wow.
Well, I think actually around the same time you were, well, not at the same time because I was playing Fallout 4, but a little after that I booted it up and did the intro and didn't really get anywhere.
It has like I said, there's a lot of problems and it is super glitchy. It is a buggy game. But it's like that diamond that is just covered in poop, and if you can get through the poop, you'll find that diamond. But it is definitely it is hard to fall in love with, but once you do, I guess it's then hard to get away from. I don't know. It stuck with me, and I was surprised by that.
That's so romantic. You should use that line on Lindsay.
Of course, of course.
And then an honorable mention for me, I wouldn't necessarily call it a great game, or maybe not even a good game, but I've been having fun with Lego Dimensions, which is funny because first I bought it for you because you were interested in that,
yeah,
the Sonic level, and then I saw that it was on sale and I had fun playing it, so I bought it for myself. And it may be because I've never actually played one of the Lego games outside of a store demo either, but I've been having a lot of fun with it, and it's just sort of the joy of, first of all, being able to play as, you know, Finn from Adventure Time, running around Springfield, USA with Batman and Gandalf and, you know, fighting the Joker, and there's just an inherent joy and fun in that. And also, I've been buying a bunch of the different packs because not only do you get character and level to play in the game, but you actually get a physical Lego toy. So it's really easy to convince myself, do I really need the Doctor Who level? No, but do I really want a Lego TARDIS? Yes.
Fun. I really enjoyed playing that game with you, and the whole taking breaks to build out the little vehicles or the standee itself. It's a fun Lego game, both inside and out of the actual game experience. I can definitely agree with Lego Dimensions being fun. I can't list it as a game that I've beaten and finished playing, though, so I do...
Yeah, that's part of why it's an honorable mention, and also just the fact that I'm more enamored with the idea and having fun with it than the fact that it's a really good game.
I think the part that stopped me from loving it as much as I could is the fact that I play a surprising amount of my PlayStation 4 on my Vita, probably because I live with someone else in my house. And the Toys to Life thing with that pad, it's completely incompatible with playing remotely on my Vita. Mm-hmm. So I can't even just leave it connected with the characters I want to play as, because during the gameplay it keeps saying, oh, now you have to move that character or vehicle to a different section on the portal. Mm-hmm. So I can't even just preset it up. I, I it, that's a game where it has to be played down in the living room.
Yeah.
As the, like, the main focus. So that's a little annoying, but it is definitely fun. And it's nice that it's co-op and just silly and fun, ridiculous.
Yeah. And sometimes just reading about the different characters and their abilities just makes me laugh just from the decisions they made. Like the fact that I think I sent you a link to the list of characters with the, the rail grind. And so I guess they've done this with a few characters where for the year two expansion, they add a new ability that is specific to one character, but then they look back at the backlog and they go, okay, well, we'll have a whole level for Sonic where he's grinding on rails because that's a big thing in his games. So Sonic is the only character with the rail grind ability. And then they look back at a year and a half of characters that they've released and go, oh yeah, remember that time Legolas slid down the elephant's trunk? He can totally grind on rails. It's just this weird, hilarious fan fiction thing.
What I, the moment that you told me about, that's still just sort of like, when we played, we got that Supergirl, I believe it was. Yeah, Supergirl, who just sort of breaks a lot of the game. But the fact that you said that you were then able to, like, bypass certain locked sections because she can just fly over them. Like, how broken can she be?
If there was anything that they wanted to make sure you couldn't, like, bypass and exploit, it would be the thing that they want you to buy extra figures to get past.
Yep. That's... It is definitely a fun game. I do want to play more, and I'll probably have a little bit more time depending on how long Second Son takes to play. Although I just started playing Transistor for the first time, so that's probably my very next game that I'll be playing.
Are you playing it on the PS4?
Yes, and the controller lights up and flashes along with the sword talking. So I thought that was kind
of
neat.
That, I kind of want to replay it on the PS4, even though I played it already on the PC, just because it uses the controller, because your sword boyfriend talks through the controller and it flashes, and I thought that is fantastic.
I've only played through, like, the first level so far. I was really impressed that, because they introduced the whole, like, you pause time to plan out your, like, full turn action. And at that point, I was like, well, now this game became super simple. I can just plan out the turn, and if I can't kill everything in this one turn, all I have to do is hide, and my energy bar will respawn, and I'll just do it again. And it wasn't until the, like, the second boss battle at the end of, like, they powered up the boss, and now he's even more aggressive and dangerous at... That was the first time where it was like, oh, hey, I can actually take damage.
Yeah.
I actually have to pay attention and, like, dodge, and he destroys the cover if I... Yeah, so I thought... So I can definitely see how this combat's going to improve and become more complicated. But that initial first, like, level, it started to worry me that I feel way too powerful already. Yeah, it looks interesting enough that I want to play that next, but Second Son is the actual game we'll be covering.
Yeah, I think the next game for me that I'll play aside from Second Son is Shantae, Half Genie Hero, since that also finally released, that has been waiting on Kickstarter for a while.
Yep, I've got it on my Vita. I'll play it occasionally when I don't have internet connection. either that or Pokemon. Man, I am so depressed that I'm still only on the second island.
Oh, I'm almost to the second island. I got to the point where I could go to the second island.
Oh, wow.
I'm running around, still, you know, running around the first island, making sure that I've checked everything out.
Oh, so you want to hear a bit of a horror story?
Sure.
This is Lindsay's first Pokemon, like, 3DS game. She played Pokemon Go, fell in love with, just, like, in general, how cute they are. And Pokemon Sun and Moon did the genius idea of, like, introducing a lot of, or reintroducing, I guess, a lot of the original Pokemon. But they're just, like, Alola forms.
Right.
But they're still there. And it, so there's enough familiarity, even though she's only played Pokemon Go, that she was into this one.
Oh, just like she, my six-year-old niece.
She got to the end of Island 2, put her DS down, left it in her purse or something, and the battery drained out, and the last time she had saved was halfway through Island 1.
Ooh.
And she got really upset with that, because she's used to now most games autosave, and... or something like that.
Yeah.
They don't just lose that much progress on you. And so she got really upset with that one. And I can't really fault her, cause that's a hard thing to lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I lost my, Pokemon X.
Oh yeah.
With all of my favorite Pokemon that I had transferred from, like, three generations earlier up into it, so
That sucks.
Yep.
I've heard stories of people who have lost stuff like that where they'll go on to eBay and just buy a already beaten game with, like, all of the Pokemon on it, so that or something like that. Like, I don't even know if they're hacked or not, but they probably are. But I've heard people do that just of screw it, I can't redo all of that as an adult now. But.
Yeah, but it's not my Pokemon. It's not...
That's true.
It's not...
They don't have your trainer codes
right.
That are unique to each time you've played the game.
And it's not Judo James who managed to reverse a fly technique that would have been super effective and knocked him out and turned it into a victory. And it's not, you know, my carefully planned team that was all completely centered around the rain environment, because that was more entertaining than, you know, picking a list of most effective Pokemon.
I love the not dragon types, but if they look like dragons, I love those. Anyways, we've digressed enough.
Yes,
I guess.
Yes.
So yeah, again, Happy New Year's to all of you, and continue gaming.
Yep. All right. Bye.
Bye.